Suicide is a global phenomenon. Each year, there are over 800,000 reported suicides worldwide, and that number is expected to increase to over 1.5 million by 2020. Dr. Joanne Rowland's an experienced counsellor, and she's written a new book called The Pain of Suicide, which examines the phenomenon of suicide with the aim of preventing needless and tragic deaths in the future. I'm delighted to welcome Joanne to the show. Thank you for joining us, Joanne.
My pleasure entirely, Bill.
Well, let's start, I guess, at the beginning here. Would it be fair to say, Joanne, or is this making it oversimplistic, that suicide is a failed cry for help by somebody who's really in a situation they can't go on with anymore?
I think you've hit it right on the head. Mm. It is a failed cry because people who've reached the stage of wanting to commit suicide, they are at their absolute end. They do not know what else to do, what else will work. They've probably tried everything. And this is the last cry. This is the last opportunity to get rid of that pain that they're feeling. So, yes.
Mm. And is it also fair to say that many more people attempt suicide than actually would die from suicide?
Absolutely right again. Mm. Actually, the statistics show that at least four times more people attempt suicide than actually commit it.
Mm. So does that mean that they really don't want to commit suicide? They want somebody to intervene at the last minute and save them?
Yeah, I think mostly the history is that women tend to go that route that you've just described because their choice of methods they tend to be less fatal than what men will do. Men will go for hanging and more drastic measures, more fatalistic measures, whereas women will tend to go for probably having a drug overdose or something like that, a less lethal method than men will do. So it is, yes, it's fair what you're saying. Absolutely.
It's also the case, I would think, that there are different types of suicide. There are suicides which, for example, somebody who maybe just jumps in front of a train, maybe that wasn't premeditated, maybe that just that in that moment that was what overcame them, as opposed to somebody who kind of plans it in advance and sets themselves up with bottles and bottles of pills. Is that also a fair comment?
It is a fair comment because what I describe that as in the book is spontaneous suicide.
Yeah.
They have this sudden desire that, you know what, I'm just tired of what's going on to me with me right now. For example, a young child may be hearing harsh words from a parent and decide that, you know what, I can't deal with that anymore. Mm-hmm. And decide that, you know, I'm going to just end this. Mm-hmm. And they just go for suicide. So yes, your comments so far have been quite fair.
I've read that one suicide survivor described suicide as the transference of the pain from the one who has committed suicide to the survivors left behind. And that's a really important point to discuss, isn't it? The survivors left behind.
It is. Because in my dealing with this particular book and the research participants, what has happened is that the majority, if not all, of the ones who have spoken to me, I call them family members, survivors, what they have said is that that person has actually ended their life. The pain for them has stopped. But what we're left with are so many unanswered questions.
Yes.
We don't know if we could have done something to help. We feel guilty in some cases because suicide has a stigma attached to it. We are left with all the stigma. So there are a number of challenges that survivors face, and it's very painful for them. So you're absolutely correct by saying that pain, the pain of continued existence, of pain for that survivor, carries on, and it can go on for as long as they live, to the point where some of them even commit suicide because they cannot deal with what is going on because they don't have answers.
Yes.
They don't know what has happened. And they're really troubled.
One would think if you watch the TV, you know, that everybody who commits suicide makes a point of writing a suicide note and explaining that why they're doing it. But of course, that's probably not even remotely close to the actual truth.
Some of it can be truthful, but it depends on how long they have actually spent to prepare that note. If it's done on the spur of the moment, it will probably deal with just topical things, what they're going through at that point. But it's important to understand that before they can get to that point of absolute hopelessness, what has been happening is that there are a number of building up of various factors that has put them, apart from the ones which you discussed before, the spontaneous ones.
Yes.
They've gone through thoughts of it. So for them to sit down and write a suicide note or a suicide message, it's, again, another cry for help.
Yes.
But they tend to do that. But it doesn't always scratch the surface, because for them to write everything what's going on, they have to deal with the whole background, and that can probably go back years and years. So, yes, it's a difficult one, that.
Yeah, I'm sure. And I imagine as well it's very difficult to recognise and help in advance somebody who may be suicidal. Are there clues that we can look for?
Okay, these clues are what we call risk factors. So what tends to happen is that, let's look at a case of somebody who is about to commit suicide. That person, their mood may change. So something different about them, their behaviors probably will change. Maybe they will start giving away their personal possessions. Maybe they will say to someone, you know what, I'm going through this particular problem. I am, you know, I'm going to do something about it. So they may say to somebody, I'm going to commit suicide. They may be in a position where they're actually stressed out. A situation has happened for them, and they're totally stressed. And it's obvious that that is happening. They may be depressed. So there are a number of factors which are preliminaries to the actual suicide that can take place, that people can look for. Isolation, social isolation, is another factor where, for example, a child may be socially excluded or feel socially excluded and may just reside in their rooms. You know, there are a number of things that can lead up to the actual suicide.
You mentioned depression there, and that, I imagine, would be one of the indicators with certain other psychiatric disorders. We often learn that people with depression are simply medicated to kind of stop the depression. But, of course, that's not actually getting to the root cause underlying the depression, which I imagine can make it a ticking time bomb.
Yes, all right. Absolutely. Depression has its roots in a number of different areas. You've got different types of depression. You've got the mothers who have just given birth to a baby, that's postpartum. Some of that can be medicated. But what I do say, if you have depression, yes, get the treatment for it, because you've got things like serotonin that needs to be balanced. The chemical messengers in the brain needs to be balanced.
Yeah.
But that's not the only thing. We need to find out what has caused that depression, and that's what takes time.
Yes.
So getting the medication is fine, but it's not the end all. It should not be the end all. There should be somebody who will sit with you, speak with you, discuss what the roots are, and take it from there.
Yeah. Coming bang up to date, I would imagine, Joanne, that social media has played a big part in the increase in suicides. People can be, for the want of a better word, keyboard warriors on social media sites, and they can be very, very cruel to people at a distance. And that's, I would think, increasing people's distress more than anything.
Oh, of course. One person I've spoken to, in fact, a survivor, because her brother actually committed suicide because of self-image. He was homosexual, and the trolling on the internet was absolutely terrible for him. He couldn't face it, and as a result, he took his own life. And what I would say is that people can be very irresponsible with the use of social media. It's very important that that is balanced. You have to have... It's good in a sense that people can relate to one another,
yes,
you know, in a positive way. But when it comes to being negative and challenging people's personality, people's personhood, then it gets very negative. And these are some of the challenges that some people who have committed suicide or attempted suicide, they have faced.
Mm.
So social media has its good points, but there are some negatives that we need to be mindful of.
Mm. And there is an increase, is there not, in suicide attempts by young people. So I guess schools as well have to have some kind of alertness factor built into them these days.
And this is one of the things that I'm really keen to do, is to speak with educators, academics, people who are, and the book talks about this, people who are able to train or speak to young people. And something that I'm keen to do or to see happen in schools is that you have more modules on mental health, where kids are able to have discussion points about their own mental health and relate with other kids in terms of what's going on for them in the community, in the homes, maybe even in the schools themselves, and have some kind of a decent dialogue that can help them to, and the teachers to be able to be aware of change behaviors. When kids are coming in with and telling stories, they must pay attention to those stories.
Mm.
You know, it's very, very critical that children are listened to, because sometimes we just fob it off. We just put it behind. But it's important that children, no matter what is said, those words are very important, because it can be all that they have to say and to somebody who's prepared to listen. So schools are important. Community groups are important. Anywhere where somebody will listen, it's absolutely critical that a child is listened to.
Yes, and indeed there are organisations which do a great job. CALM is one of them, that's for men, and of course Samaritans. They must be a very important tool in the fight against suicide.
Absolutely right, Bill. Samaritans, as you know, they do a really great job 24/7. They're a listening ear. There's always somebody there on the other end of the line to listen to a problem. But the problem is how many people make use of that rather than choose to go the route of suicide.
Yes.
So what I will do is encourage people, make use of every avenue that's available. Start with your family. If there's somebody you can trust within the family group, start with them before you can, you know, go further out. But if you have to go further out, then do it. CALMS is for men.
Yeah.
You're aware that, as I said before, a number of women, more women attempt suicide than men. But men are being abused. And because of this macho image, they tend to keep that to themselves. But men are in a place of hurt.
Yeah.
And they need to be able to speak out and to say, this is what's happening to me. And for that, they need somebody to listen to them. CALMS is one of those organizations that do a great job. So, yes, absolutely.
And finally, Joanne, if we know somebody who we think is suffering, experiencing a crisis, it's a difficult point, isn't it, as to when you intervene. What should you do in terms of intervention, and when should you make that intervention?
I think once you see a change in some person, it's important to talk. Talking is good.
Yeah.
If you see it, that person is not acting the way you're used to see them, ask a question. Find out what's going on for that person. You know, they may say it, they may not. It depends on how far depressed they are. Usually if somebody is very, very depressed, it's very hard to get them to speak about what's going on. But stay with that person. If it's safe for you to do so, stay with them and ask them if they will require you to get help. And if they go forward with that, get the help they need. But you, in turn, protect yourself. But it's always, always a good idea to speak to somebody about it.
Yes.
Get a counselor involved.
Yeah.
Get a professional, an expert, who's able to do. One of the very helpful techniques is cognitive behavior therapy.
Yes.
It's called CBT. It's very important because the counselor will sit with that person, look at what their thinking is all about, their thoughts, and if it's rational, they will help them to sort those thoughts out before it gets to that place of suicide. So I would recommend speaking to a good counselor as soon as you can, and encourage that person who you see signs of suicide on to speak to a counselor as well.
Great advice, as indeed it all is in the book, The Pain of Suicide. Dr. Joanne Rowland, we thank you so much. I know you're very busy on the other side of the world at the moment. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank
really,
you,
really appreciate it. Thank you. Take care.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.